translation, the southern gate of the city was known as Pitrihu, and through that gate King Puranjan used to visit the city named Dakshina Panchala, accompanied by his friend Shutadhara. Purport. The right ear is used for karma kandaya or fruitive activities. As long as one is attached to the enjoyment of material resources, he hears from the right ear and uses the five senses to elevate himself to the higher planetary systems like Pitriloka. Consequently, the right ear is here described as the Pitrihu gate. Om Gyanatimi Randhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Nilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guru Nama Shrishtam Manamapisha Tiputra Matra Sarupam Rupam Tasya Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasha Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripyashi Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Atapadikamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavangsa Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Purjana Saitam Krishna Titanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Sra. Continuing the allegorical narration of Puranjan, or semi-allegorical. It may sound like a strange term, semi-allegorical, but the story of Puranjan is being narrated by Narada to Maharaj Prachina Barhishat to instruct Prachina Barhishad, as he will tell him at the end. Actually, Puranjan means you. So, although not all the activities of Puranjan are exactly those of Prachina Barhishad, if they had been exactly the same in every respect, then Maharaj Prachina Barhishad, he would have understood that. But it describes the activities of the same person, but instead of directly saying, you are committing sinful activities, therefore you are going to hell, you should be Krishna conscious, which is the fact. Puranjan's story was told by Narada as... Yeah, the story itself is full of allegory. Different persons represent different subtle features of reality. At the end, Maharaj Pratina Barhishat could have understood to some small extent that Narada, he's a sadhu, he didn't come here just to tell me some stories, just to, you know, I'm a king, I also don't just, you know, there's a time for listening to stories. But that's done, there's a special time set aside for entertainment, and sadhus, that's also done by the magads and the low class kind of people who, they tell stories. Actually, storytelling is for, in Vedic culture is for low-class kind of people, and telling stories of from the Puranas, that's also that's generally considered the lower-class kind of Brahmanas, Puranikas. And of course, to recite the Srimad Bhagavatam, that's for the topmost Vaishnavas, even though they may be Sutta, they may be born of a mixed caste, or thus considered lowest caste, but they are considered topmost. So these are the classifications. So Narad, he's coming and telling a story, and at the end of it all, Barishat must have been somewhat confused. You could see there's some instruction there, that the king is killing animals, and therefore animals are waiting to get him after his death. So yeah, but all these different parts about the queen and going to the forest and hunting and it's like that. It's semi-allegorical because the king himself goes. Kings do go to the forest for hunting, but all the imagery that is created by Narada, it must have been difficult for the king to, okay, that was a nice story. What's the point? What's the moral of the story? What's it all about? And then Narada says at the end, well, actually, you are that person. And then, illumination. It all comes. Oh, really? That's me. Oh, okay. And you have to go back through the whole story and think about it all point by point and see, oh yeah, okay, all right, that. I heard that. I was trying to work it out, couldn't really understand. Now I get it. I see. So it's a very effective means of preaching. This indirect preaching by Narada, getting the point home to King Puranjan. The southern gate of the city. Of course, the king is. It's expected that the king is attached to the city. The city here is the Navadvare Pure Dehi. It's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, the city. Which, the city of nine gates is the body. The Dehi is the possessor of the body, or the person who considers himself to be the possessor of the body. And the body is considered the city of nine gates. Here it's stated, Srila Prabhupada states in the purport that, yeah, then afterward all the imagery will be explained. Just like people who are of somewhat intellectual disposition, they always try to find the deeper meaning in something, which is often inappropriately. Just like someone will look at a painting and they'll think, yes, the art critics will comment, this means this and this means that. A literary critic will read some poetry and find the meaning in this. You on the psychological level, which is all useless. The psychological level divorced from Krishna consciousness is called the manoratha, the chariot of the mind by which one is pulled around here and there, which is taken very seriously by people who are on their own manoratha. Generally people take their body to be the most important thing. Intellectuals, mundane intellectuals, take their mundane intellectual activities to be most important. They take it very seriously, and therefore they conjure up concepts such as freedom of the individual, with no idea what it means to be an individual. They think the individual is the present set of illusions which they are attached to, which they call the self. The senses centered around the mind. What is this? What is that? Shodram chakshu sparsham cha rasam grahanam eva cha adhishtanam manaschaiva vishayanu pasevate. The living being, according to the body that he gets different facilities of seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, feeling. According to the body that he's got. Various biologists have monstrously misused their human form of life, and by examining the various eyes of various different living beings, and have presumed, although they can't really say, how the insect with the multiple lens eye. So how they see and they've concluded that certain creatures can only see in black and white, and then there's a fish eye, the fish sees. By studying their retina, their eyes, they presume to understand how different living beings can see, and then they teach this, and I had to learn that at school. And they've wasted their lives and those of others of studying the different ways of seeing, how a fish sees, how a fly sees, what do they hear? See, we learn a dog can hear at a very high pitch, higher than a human. Therefore, they have the dog whistle. Some people use in the West to call their dog when he's run away. You can't hear it, the dog hears it. And he comes running. You've heard of that? Really? How did you hear about that? They have dog whistles in India yet, don't they? They didn't become that advanced in dog culture yet. How do you learn about that? Maybe I mentioned it in a class sometime. Anyway, they have dog whistles, and because the dog, he can hear in a higher, in a broader spectrum of sound. So Shrotram, Chakshu, Sparshanam, various tastes for the pig, as we have learned from Srila Prabhupada's purports in Bhagavad Gita, he finds rasa in the night soil, which means the stuff that people pass out, usually in the mornings in India. I guess it gets all finally processed in the night and then is fit for ejection in the morning. In other words, stool. Oh, there are so many words in every language. It's one of those substances which in every language there are many words for, usually vulgar, I presume. In Western languages, there are all, and at least in English, there are so many kinds of words for that stuff which comes out your backside. And usually the words are vulgar. So the pigs, they like to eat that. You don't like to eat that. Some human beings have been known to eat it, but it's not recommended. So different bodies that we get, we'd have different faculties of seeing, feeling, touching, hearing, tasting, smelling, centered around the mind. Vishayanupasevati. The mind takes pleasure in eating halava, as Prabhupada writes, or if you happen to have the body of a pig, in eating processed halava, processed in the stomach of a human being. In other words, stool. They don't like to eat halava directly. It should be pre-processed, suitable for consumption by pigs. Of course, in the West, they may not understand all this, because the pigs, they get special pig food. But even, I don't know, in the mechanized West, but I guess in Croatia and all these countries, same as we had in England in our childhood, just all the garbage, the slops, they call it, all the rotting food is given to the pigs, and they eat that. And they like it. They're enthusiastic for it. So according to the mind, the kind of mentality we have, we're attracted to various kinds of vishay. Vishayanupasevati. So vishay means, it means a subject or a category in the school classes in India. This class you see on the school book is written vishaya. In Tamil also, probably not, different word. It means subject. What is the subject? Geography, math, whatever. But it also means sense gratification. Vishayacharya, shairoshe majya. So Vishayacharya, an impersonalist, would take that to mean to give up all subjects. Give up every bit. But it's a devotional soul. To give up, to chorda means let go, leave it, sense gratification. So this is the, in material life, one gets a certain kind of body, the nine gates. They're all meant for sense gratification. The materialist sees them as all meant for sense gratification. Of course, one of the forms of sense gratification, the touching, that's not done through the nine, there's the skin, that's done by the skin. But otherwise, the eyes for seeing, the tongue for tasting, which obviously the tongue is in the mouth, in one of the gates, and then passing stool, that's also sense gratification. As quoting Bhava Ananda Goswami, there are only two kinds of happiness in this material world, having sex and passing stool. So those are done through two gates, one at the front, one at the back. Some people like to put the front at someone's back also, and they find pleasure in that. It's all these holes of the body. They're all in material life, they're meant for sense gratification. But if you consider it, it's all rather disgusting. Just like out of the backside comes stool, sometimes comes blood, mucus, all kinds of things. Right? Stool itself is nasty enough. The eye is may look very beautiful. You have beautiful eyes. Oh, such beautiful eyes, he said. This woman has such beautiful eyes. But they're not actually beautiful. If you stick some sharp object in there and see, it won't. All the gunge that comes out is not very beautiful. And even if you consider, what is it? It's some tissue covered with some thin layer of liquid with some kind of chemicals and this and that. It's not very beautiful. You think it's, the eyes are beautiful? Okay, take it out. You can take it with you. Then you can look at it whenever you like. But then it doesn't look beautiful. What is the beauty? The beauty is in the imagination. As it said, beauty is in the eye of the perceiver. Who said that? Don't know. Maybe in the Bible. Beauty is in the eye of the perceiver. Or as Srila Prabhupada quoted, it's probably from some Shastric reference that to every man his wife seems beautiful. Though not every woman is beautiful, but to him, especially when they're newly married, seems very beautiful, like that. So beauty is in the eye of the beholder. He sees, like he wants it to be like that, because Maya gives the requisite mentality for enjoying this material world. That one is attracted to that which is not attractive. Yesterday we talked about asat. Asat yare satya karimani. In material consciousness, that which is not real is accepted as real. See how this discrimination between sat and asat is the whole basis of it is spiritual life. Without that, there is no spiritual life. There's no use to talking about how it, praying to Yamuna and Yamuna will award you love of the divine couple and all this. But if one hasn't got any basic understanding of what is real and what is not real, that's why the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is rasa, it is meant for rasa. Life is rasa. Raso vai saha. Krishna, or the Absolute Truth, is rasa. What is meaning? Rasa. But that, it must be on the basis of tattva-gyan. It's just like you may have great software, but you have to have some proper hardware to run it on. That's a mundane analogy. If you don't have, you don't have the hardware, the software doesn't work. So if you don't have the right tattva gyan, then there's no question of rasa gyan. We find Bhagavad Gita is tattva gyan artha darshanam. It's tattva gyan. Then in Bhagavad, then we come on to Srimad Bhagavatam, which is also replete with tattva gyan, and there is introduced rasa. First of all, tattva. Jamadhyasa yataha. What is the absolute truth? Then, pivata bhagavatam rasa malayam. Yachchinvatam rasa gyanam swadu swadu pade pade. So rasa, that is the desired, that is the ultimate. Through the nine gates, one has to receive or interact with Vishay, and the rasa is experienced in the mind. But if one is in material consciousness, then the mind is attracted to objects which produce a rasa, which is ultimately not pleasing. May seem pleasing for a short time, but ultimately it's not pleasing. Whereas in spiritual consciousness, because the mind is fixed on the proper object, on the proper vishaya. If one takes this material world, the objects of this material world as vishaya, the subject on which one's mind should be focused, then that becomes sense gratification and it becomes the cause of all suffering. That the subject matter of the mind should be savai mana krishna padaravindayoho. The subject matter on which the mind should focus is Krishna. And then, as we see in this series of verses, describes all the senses. In the verse which I'm quoting from Bhagavad Gita, it describes the gyanendriyas, the senses of interaction with the sense objects in a manner that there is sensory perception, touching, tasting, smelling, feeling, hearing. There are also the karmendriyas, the legs for moving, the arms for working, the rectum for passing stool, and so on. So, gyanendriya, karmendriya. But the subject of perception is Krishna, and the subject of action or service around which, on which one's karma, the subject of karma, which activity is Krishna. So we find in this series of verses describing Maharaj Ambarish how his all his senses, 10 senses plus 1, 5 gyanendriyas, 5 karmendriyas, and the mind, which is the center of the senses, they're all engaged in the service of Krishna. He's smelling. He'll smell the tulasi, flowers and leaves. So in this way, smelling. Seeing, Mukunda Lingala. He'll see the form of the deity of Mukunda, of Krishna. Then the legs are used for going to the temple. The arms are used for cleaning the temple and embracing the devotees of the Lord. So this is the proper use of the senses. As Srila Prabhupada mentions here, in material consciousness, Paranjan Maharaj is in material consciousness. A pious person may be aware of these subjects to some extent. He may, just like we see Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna used such terminology in talking to Arjuna. It's obvious that Arjuna is an educated person. By educated, it means that he knows the terms and the concepts of karma, jnana, yoga, bhakti. Krishna uses all these terms. He's already familiar with that. But it's quite possible to be familiar with all these terms and to have a completely mundane outlook on life. So we see that Puranja, or Prachina Barhishat, he was aware that after leaving this body, one has to go to another destination. But like materialistically pious people in Vedic culture, he thought, okay, where am I going next? I better act piously, so I'll go to the heavenly planets. But one who is fortunate to associate with Narada, he will learn that the senses should be used to elevate oneself, not to the higher planetary systems in this world, but beyond this world, to go back home, back to Godhead. That is the point being explained throughout this story. Any question about this? There may be so many questions. Allegorical, semi-allegorical, straightforward. In fact, all the verses of Bhagavatam, they could be explained in allegorical ways also, because it's not just this, but that we find that what is that? Krishna Tulla Bhagavat. Bibhu Sarbashroi Prati Shloke Prati Akhare Nana Arthakoi. Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, is the same as Krishna. Who Krishna is all powerful and the shelter of all. And Bhagavatam, in every verse and every syllable, speaks with various meanings, or in other words, has various meanings. So we find that although the narrations in the Bhagavatam are generally non-allegorical, and generally Mayavadis like to explain everything in an allegorical way, because if everything's allegorical, then nothing is real, right? Nothing has any actual meaning, and that's what they want to do. They'll say Krishna means black. Black means unknown. So ultimately everything is unknown. Can't know Krishna. So why bother? And like this. They go on like this. But we find our Vaishnava Acharyas, while accepting the narrations of the Bhagavatam as factual, also find certain narrations have been explained by them in allegorical ways also. So there are sub-layers also. Just like we find Bhaktivinoda Thakur in describing he analyzed or compared the various demons killed by Krishna and Balaram to various undesirable traits within the devotee which are to be overcome with the help of Krishna and Balaram, and also the forest fire, which is not exactly a demon, but is also included in that. We also see that the brothers of Krishna were killed by Kamsa are compared to various bad qualities such as kam, krodh, and all these. And in this allegory, Devaki is what is that? Devaki is it compared to bhakti, and then all of these have to be killed before one can come to bhakti, before Krishna appears in the heart. So like this, acharyas, they also find allegories too. So we shouldn't be anxious in the way that Mayavadis are to explain everything. Everything's allegorical, and then there's nothing real left. And everything's it's just all in the platform of the mind. So they like to take all kinds of words. This Seva Vilas Prabhu in Baroda was telling me once, this the commentators on Ram Charitmanas, they'll take the word Vatika and say Va means this, Ti means this, Ka means this, in their own imaginary way. And that we also find, that's also there in Shastra, but when it's in Shastra or given by the Acharyas, then it's not in an imaginative way, just like Diksha, the term Diksha. Divyam Gyanam Yato Dadyat. The first syllable stands for Divya Gyanam and Kshama. Ksha stands for Kshapiyati. Purva Sankshayam, the previous, Prabhupada translates as this as the, Ksha stands for destruction. Destruction of previous sins. So Diksha means the process by which previous sins are destroyed and one attains spiritual knowledge. So that's not etymological. But it may be taken like that also. So allegory is not rejected. It may be there, but what is the clear reality of Krishna and our relationship with Krishna? That should be kept in the forefront. Not that we're so much anxious to allegorize everything. And the allegory should be clear in relationship to bhakti. If the allegory is meant to make an unclear subject clear, but these Mayavadis, they tell so many allegories and everything just becomes a big confusion because they're confused themselves. And they just spread confusion with their, even English words they'll take and they'll explain in some imaginary, supposedly spiritual manner. All useless. Devotees shouldn't be anxious to exhibit imaginative, speculative intelligence. Everything should be toward Krishna, just like you could theoretically. Anyway, this verse, you could take up so many things, but better just follow the Acharya. That is the best way. Acharya maganuganamam, anugamanam. To follow the path which is given by the Acharyas. So, without the Acharyas, Bhagavatam would be very difficult to understand. We may think we'll learn Sanskrit and understand, but it's not just a matter of the language. There are also so many, subtle, philosophical points which rest upon a deep understanding of the kind of philosophical discourse which is typical of Vedic culture. And there's also the very point that Bhagavatam brings us to Bhagavad Bhakti. But Bhakti, we don't understand that not because we're not Sanskrit scholars, but because we are in Maya. So Sanskrit scholarship, you may be a great... Some of the people who are most in Maya, actually the people in history are the most in Maya, they're probably the Sanskrit scholars who take the Shastra and misinterpret it. They're more in Maya than anyone, and they put others in Maya with their explanations. So we have to hear from devotees, and especially Srila Prabhupada's great gift. I mean, among his so many great gifts is he made this subject so very, very clear. Everything's very clear. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Jive Surupoi Krishna Nityadas. What could be more clear than that? The Jiva is supposed to serve Krishna. That's the proper situation, to serve Krishna. Then who is Krishna? The Mayavadis, if they hear this, they generally don't come to devotional gatherings, but if a devotee says the duty or the dharma of the jiva is to serve Krishna, they say, oh yes, yes, very nice. But in their own understanding, because they think everything's nice, They're supposed to see everything as nice. Jobi huata wobi achata. All this kind of stuff. Whatever was good. But Krishna means the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who is to be surrendered to? Surrender means you have to do what he says, act on his terms and conditions. You have to make it very clear. Otherwise the Mayavadis will also talk of God. Surrender to God. Krishna. Yeah, you like Krishna? Okay, Krishna is God. They have no attitude of surrender to Krishna. When you have to get right down to the specifics, you have to surrender. You have to do what is stated in Shastra. You have to accept Krishna as the master eternally. You're not the same as Krishna. All these points have to be made clear. Otherwise, we just talk about God, love. People, they like it. Until you become specific, they can go along with it. Because they're nirvisheshavadi. Nirvishesh means non-specific. Keep everything very vague. Rascals. Kick them in their face with boots. Specific. Specific instruction. Not non-specific. Love. Love everyone, everything. No, we're going to kick you in the face with boots, you rascal. Because you deny that the object of love is Krishna. You say love, but you'll put love everywhere, everything, especially beautiful women. I see God in the beautiful woman. God is everywhere, but especially this woman is so. I could embrace the old women also, but this young woman likes me so much. We have a local avatar, right, from Tiruvannamalai, who is fond of embracing young, beautiful women. So he has some concocted excuse for doing so. This is what the Mayavadis come to. They talk of love and they end up as a pig. Because they want gross sense gratification. Well, it comes to gross sense gratification. So you should be specific. All this vagueness, love. Even to say God, you may think, oh, she's right. She believes in God. They don't believe in God. God for them is sense gratification. That's all. Themselves. God. No, who is God? Krishna. And it's not just you say Krishna, it's just some name that if you want you can call any other name, but you like to call Krishna? Okay, you call Krishna. No, Krishna is God. No one else is God. God means the supreme controller to you, to whom you have to submit. This is preaching, not some vague discussion of God and love and be nice to all and we can all chant Hare Krishna together. They'll chant Hare Mayavadis, they'll chant Hare Krishna, then they'll chant Jai Ganesh, Jai Durga, or sing some song which is totally mundane. So, non-specificness should be avoided. Don't be non-specific. You become this either the specificness of the straightforward demons that we want to enjoy sense gratification, or the non-specificness of impersonalistic demons who don't say that they want to enjoy sense gratification, but speak of spiritual life without surrendering to Krishna. Which means you have to keep it all very vague. All the gods are the same. Vagueness if there's vagueness, non-specificness, we should immediately understand. If this person is talking of God, spiritual life, even they don't usually use the term spiritual life, they say spiritual, because spiritual life, it suggests that there's something, some rules to follow. Yeah, something specific. All very vague. So, if you want to be a big guru and have many followers, just be a Mayavadi. Because it's what people love. You see, they like to feel spiritual. Without any specific rules, and definitely without any surrender. Or even if they say surrender, that's also vague. Surrender to the inner baby. Surrender to the love within your heart which spreads cosmically throughout the universe. All vague, kick in their face with boots. And make sure the boots have got spikes in them too. You see, our Acharya told us to kick the Mayavadis in the face with boots, so in the next generation we can make some extra contribution also. Extra theological. What are my theological contributions? Not just with boots, we should have spikes in the boots also. So, alright, this is my theological contribution. I did it, I became an Acharya. I said something new. All right, Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.